podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. About 3 weeks to go now till the start of the county championship season, and we're going to focus on that and the prospects for that in this podcast mainly, partly because it feels like the international part of the winter season has come to a close with that final T20 in Bangladesh, which of course England lost. And Simon, before we get into kind of talking about county cricket, and by the way, today we've got a special interview with a very prominent coach who knows cricket backwards. He's coached so many different countries and teams. Currently, he's the coach of Derbyshire, Mickey Arthur. And we've got a long and very interesting interview with him to come. But just to kind of draw the curtain down, Simon, on the international winter, how did you see that last couple of games for England, given they've had a long winter of cricket in different places?
Well, it's been astonishing, really. They've toured five different countries. They've been in New Zealand and Pakistan and South Africa and Australia for the T20 World Cup. The great triumph, really, of the winter, along with the Pakistan Test Series. And they've been in Bangladesh. T20 is not their priority at the moment, but they were clean swept by Bangladesh, who were good in their own conditions. And I think it's just an early warning to teams going to the World Cup that it's not going to be easy to finish in that top four when you have India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, five subcontinental teams playing in that World Cup. There are going to be some potential upsets along the way, and it's going to be a real arm wrestle to finish in the top four, despite the fact that England have a lot of talent, a lot of white ball talent, and, of course, they've got a lot of players now who are used to different conditions around the world. Playing in the Pakistan Super League, playing in the IPL, that will stand them in good stead. But I think it's going to be it wasn't straightforward last time to qualify for the last four in English conditions. So it could be a bit of a struggle for them in subcontinental conditions. I think it just adds a bit more spice to the World Cup, actually, that you will have perhaps more sides in with a chance of qualifying for the semi-finals. Really looking forward to it already, but there's still quite a lot to go before then. Of course, the other thing, Yoz, that's happened since we did our last podcast, we were speculating about who was going to be in the World Test Championship final last week, and we thought Sri Lanka had a bit of a chance. Well, that was snuffed out by another dramatic test match in New Zealand, with New Zealand winning off the last ball of a test match. I was in that game in Zimbabwe in the 90s, where the game finished level. Scores finished level. It was the first time the match had been drawn with scores level.
Was that the flipping murder something's game? That was the bumble. That was we flipping murdered them.
Yeah. We flipping murdered them, although it finished in a draw. Yeah, it was that game in Bulawayo. That was my first test match on Test Match Special. But I mean, an equally tight finish in Christchurch, and Sri Lanka, they couldn't get over the line. New Zealand wouldn't win another tight one. So it's as we thought, India against Australia in the World Test Championship final. India and Australia, I mean, they went from one extreme to another, didn't they, with the pitches for this test series. Bit disappointing, really. Flat pitch in Ahmedabad, and in a way, a bit of a bore draw, really. Disappointing end to the series. Actually, disappointing end to at times a dramatic series with lots of talking points, but perhaps not quite the balance in the pitches that would have really drew out the skills of all the players in the way that I think we as neutrals and perhaps committed spectators in Australia and India would have liked.
And actually, talking of pitches and talking of turning pitches, I've seen one this week which was a real Bunsen burner times 10. I've just been in Desert Springs, the resort in southern Spain, which is actually a very good cricket facility now. It's been developed over about the last five or six years. And it's interesting. It's a really interesting place. It's south of Alicante, about 2 hours south of Alicante on the southeast coast of Spain. And it's the only desert environment in Europe, which is obviously why it's called Desert Springs. It's incredibly dry and hot. And I've just been there for a couple of days where it was, well, I don't know, 24 degrees, because Derbyshire and Hampshire both spent a week out there and actually set up a game as well to play. So there is a proper cricket ground, which has got a one-day international eligibility now. And it's got a big space, a big outfield, very, very good sort of academy, which is for nets and a net area, very good facilities. And obviously the inevitable golf course, beautiful golf course threaded in around the villas that have been built there. Ian Botham and Joe Root have both got properties there. And in fact, the Root Academy is based in Desert Springs, or certainly the winter part of the Root Academy is based there. So it's really becoming quite an interesting cricketing infrastructure and location. And the great thing is the weather this time of year is magnificent. So it really is a fantastic place to go and train. I say that the pitch was a Bunsen. In fact, it turned so much that really it was dangerous to face seamers on it, just because it hadn't been watered sufficiently, and unfortunately they hadn't quite got the preparation right this time, which is unusual because normally they do.
Should have played the fourth test between India and Australia there then, Yoz, in keeping with
it would have been absolutely
three.
Magnificent. It would only have lasted about a day, I think, because it was turning square, but it was interesting to watch just the spinners bowling. And actually, you know, talking to sort of one or two of them, they don't get much experience of bowling in really turning conditions. And so the likes of Mason Crane and one or two others were really enjoying the challenge, actually. And plus, watching the batsman play spin that was really turning was also fascinating. And you can see the cultural contrast. Whereas most subcontinental players would tend to play largely with a straight bat and just work it with the spin and, use their wrists and things, English players tend to use the sweep a lot more and the reverse sweep and very effectively. So there was a lot of, swishing of the blades to hit the ball square of the wicket. And it was an interesting experience. But it is actually the most fantastic environment to practice in. Perfect conditions weather-wise, fantastic net facilities where bowlers are really charging in and batsmen were being put through the mill. And in fact, they did Derbyshire against Hampshire in the nets. So, the Hampshire bowlers, the likes of Carl Abbott and Keith Barker, running in at the opening batsmen and for Derbyshire. So it was an interesting week, actually, really enjoyable.
This thing about getting one-day international status, that's completely gone over my head. So is there any prospect that they might hold a one-day international there?
Well, that's what they hope. That they will, when you talk about one-day internationals now, of course, you can actually stage them with some of the associate countries as well. So Spain are probably going to base their own cricket down there. And, the Spanish team is sort of developing. I mean, obviously, it's largely made up of expats, people probably from the subcontinent who are now living in Madrid or Barcelona or somewhere and love cricket. And there's not that many Spanish-speaking players, I would imagine. But, that all these associate nations are emerging and need somewhere to play. The Irish team have played out there and practiced out there. Some of the 100 female teams are going out there for a tournament. There's a lot going on, actually. Denmark, another associate country, they've got a session of a couple of days there this weekend. So it's really a great place to go. And clubs could go as well and, mix a bit of golf with a bit of cricket practice. So it's a fantastic place, actually.
You spoke to Mickey Arthur while you were there, Derbyshire coach. And there's a lot in his interview that's coming up very shortly. I first came across him as a sort of hard-working opening batter playing for Orange Free State against England A on a England A tour in the early 90s, 93, 94. I remember him scoring 100 in Bloemfontein in the second innings of that match in January 1994. But he was a decent first-class cricketer, but he's far more known now, of course, for coaching, for Mickey Cam, for Homework Gate, and for I mean, we should actually think about his coaching achievements. Actually, you know, he's coached a lot of the major test playing nations, hasn't he? Pakistan and Sri Lanka and South Australia.
So, I mean, he's, for me, he's a sort of, he's a cricketing evangelist. He's someone that, he just exudes this enthusiasm about the game. And he's a very compelling character. He's taken the job as Derby coach, which, you know, wouldn't be everybody's choice. Derbyshire, who, you know, are kind of, everybody's kind of, it used to be a standing joke. Derby was the kind of the wooden spoonis every year and all that, and you only go to play there in retirement or whatever. I mean, it was people were quite unfair about Derbyshire, really, because there's a lot of great club cricket played in Derbyshire and a lot of beautiful grounds, actually, as well. I mean, I've played at Chesterfield, played at Matlock, Chatsworth House. Have you ever been there? My God,
no.
That's got a cricket ground. Magnificent. So it really is a place which should achieve more than it's ever done. It's only won the championship once. And that's sad, really. So I think, you know, Mickey Arthur's ultimate aim, and he likes taking on these challenges, is to try and change that, isn't it?
Yeah, Derbyshire last season finished fifth. They were 40 points behind second place Middlesex. They won three, lost three, and drew eight. And they were more competitive, weren't they? You're right when you think of Derbyshire at the moment. I mean, they're one of those counties who everyone says, you know, why do they exist? Is there any point in a county like Derbyshire existing? They're destined to be, you know, bottom of the second division or near the bottom of the second division. But I think last season they were competitive. They actually had a very good time of it in the Blast, didn't they? They reached the quarterfinals and surprised a few people. They were well beaten eventually in their quarterfinals. So it'd be, you know, worth keeping an eye on them this season, whether they can continue that improvement that they showed last season. Should we hear from Mickey?
Yeah, we should, because he talks a great game, doesn't he? But he also, he's obviously absolutely consumed by trying to bring on players. And he's very enthusiastic about the future of English cricket. He's very effusive about the talent there is in the game. And I think that's one of the reasons why he tweeted last year, "I loved everything about my first year in county cricket." So my first question to him was, why?
Well, it's always been an attraction for me, Simon. County cricket, England cricket in England. When I was a little boy, I used to subscribe to Wisden and Cricketer. So I used to get the magazines once a month, and English cricket was a real interest of mine. So I followed your career at Middlesex as I did with every other county. So I knew what was going on. So my real wish was at some point to come into county cricket. And last season didn't disappoint me, for the simple reason that county cricket for me is the fabric of the English summer. The memberships around the counties really drive the game. There's a massive amount of interest. And I thought there was some darn good cricket as well. So I loved as well being on the, you know, everybody talks about the county ground. I love it. I could wake up every day being at a cricket ground and be happy with that. So I just loved everything about it, and it didn't disappoint at all.
Even though, actually, from a success point of view, Derbyshire were, I suppose, mid-table, second division. You didn't qualify for any of the sort of finals or anything, but I guess you saw progress, did you?
100%. So I came into a team that had won one game the previous year. And the one thing I wanted to do was because I'd been 12 years on the road. I'd been in Sri Lanka for 2 years in a hotel, 3 years previous to that with Pakistan for 3 years. So I'd been 5 years living in a hotel through the corona pandemic. It had just got... So I wanted another challenge. But for me, the challenge was going to an unfashionable county and trying to change them around. I wanted to go to something, with all due respect, that was broken and try and make it better. That, for me, was the challenge. You know, it was so easy at the same point. You know, there was Middlesex and there were various other counties that were looking for coaches, because I decided the time was right to go into county cricket. But the one that interested me, funny enough, was Derbyshire. The guy that made the biggest impact on me, the late Eddie Barlow, in my cricket career, they've always talked really passionately about Derbyshire. And another one of my first class coaches was Fred Swarbrick, obviously with a massive Derbyshire link. So I always kind of followed Derbyshire. It looked like they needed some help, and I was keen to get involved. So from last year, we were up until the second last game of the season in Cardiff. We were in the mix for promotion. We lost there, which put us just out of. And if you looked at the second division, we had Notts that were miles ahead, and then there was Middlesex, Glamorgan, ourselves, Worcestershire, all very, very much of a muchness. So that was a massive improvement. And then we went on a streak where we won 9 Vitality Blast game in a row, the most Derbyshire had ever won, and got to a quarter final, and then got absolutely belted by Somerset. So there was so much improvement. And I ended the season, I said to the players, it was great, but we've won nothing. But now I know that you're ceilings are a lot higher than people have always given you credit for. So I'm really keen this year to see how far we can take this group of players.
You seem to like the tough challenges.
Yeah.
You know, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Derbyshire. I mean, they're not obvious choices for it's not making life easy for you, is it?
No, but I don't want that. You know, I was very young. I was 35. I'd been coaching for 3 years when I got the South African job. That was a challenge, but I wasn't the best version of the coach that I could be, and Graham and I kind of spluttered along, but I learned so much in those 5 years. Australia happened probably too soon for me. Western Australia was great. Australia ended in tears. And then I fell out of love a little bit with cricket for the first time, and I had a 2-year hiatus out of big time coaching. I went to a school in Perth and fell back in love with cricket, worked with younger players, did the franchises. I went to the Caribbean Premier League, I went to the Bangladesh Premier League, I went to the PSL. But I didn't have a team. My team was Christchurch Grammar School, and I remember working with the under 13s, under 15s, and the first team all through a weekend, and I fell back in love with the game then, and it was then that Pakistan came calling, and then I was the best version of myself as a coach. I think the 3 years I gave to or I worked with Pakistan was phenomenal. There were so many highlights, brought so many good young players through. And I won a Champions Trophy, which was amazing. But I think then I was the best coach I could be. Sri Lanka worked exceptionally well, and who knows if I'd still be there if it wasn't for coronavirus. But I wanted to go to Derbyshire. I wanted the challenge. And all those teams were a challenge. Pakistan, when we took over, were 8th in the world across all formats. We won a Champions Trophy, got to number one in 2020 cricket, got to number one in Test cricket. Sri Lanka, the same. We improved the environment. But the key to that, Simon, was going out and finding young players and building a team, creating a culture, changing the environment, making it cutting edge, making it high performance. Those are the things that really interest me. And I think the tragic teams at that point in time are the ones that need it the most. And it's the ones that, as a coach, you can get so much response out of. And it's so fulfilling and satisfying. So, yeah, I do. I find myself with those challenges, but that's where I want to be.
And, you know, there's a great variety of different teams that you've coached there. Can you use the same coaching ethos on all of them?
Well, I learned a big lesson, because I thought that coaching Australia was going to be very much like coaching South Africa. And that's where I misjudged the room. The cultures were different. I took that into Pakistan, where I went and sat back, got to understand the culture, which plays a massive role in that dressing room. It was the same with Sri Lanka. Religion plays a massive role in those teams.
Is there a hierarchy as well, which sometimes needs a little bit of smoothing out?
100%, and it needs smoothing out, which we did. But found some young players and built teams. Those countries at that point in time very much needed rebuilding. And that's, you know, I think you sometimes get some coaches that can take a team, a very, very good team, and take it to another level. And you get coaches that come in, build a team, and then take that team on a journey. And then in 3 years, they need another voice to take them up to another level again. And that's the kind of coach I find myself as. So to see, having gone and found a young Baba Azam in the indoor center in Karachi, in Lahore, and then seeing his journey, that's where I get my satisfaction as a coach. You know, there's a young boy in Sri Lanka, Patam Nasanka. I think he's going to be outstanding. Watching him, going to find him and bringing him in. But then I always say, you know, every player is like a piece of a jigsaw. And then once he can put that jigsaw together and you get the full picture, it becomes so powerful because you see the players stop believing in themselves. That culture is that you put in place needs to be ruthless to start off with. But once you get buy-in from the players, it becomes powerful. And the buy-in from the players is the success that they start having. And they see that it starts working, and that success then transcends into results. Then you know you've cracked it, and it's a good place to be.
It must be a very unstable life, though, being a coach, because you're, and obviously we've seen you, the Mickey cam turns up all the time. You know, people love it, don't they? The camera's trained on you whenever you're the coach in a match. But it is an unstable life as a coach because you've got no power, have you, really? I mean, obviously you can create philosophies and ideas and so on, but in the end, you live and die by how they perform.
Yeah, you do. You do. But I still believe that if you create the right ethos, and yeah, sure, you need the cattle, you need the players. But if you create that culture and you get buy-in from the players, you know, strange and good things can happen from it. You know, little roots turn into beautiful trees because you've invested in those players. You know, players want clarity. They want to know how they fit in. They want honesty. They want to know how they're going to play, when they're going to play, and if they get left out, they want to know what they need to do. And they want trust. They want to feel that they can trust you. And if you get those things right, success is just around the corner. And that's hard to, it's easy to say, but it's actually hard to do, and that takes time. But once you feel it and you feel it clicking in, it's amazing. I love creating environments. I love seeing young players perform, and that's what drives me every day. Every day I get driven by the fact that another young player who we've put time into is having the best day of his life, and he thinks he's bulletproof for that day. And those are the things that that will drive me continually until I finish.
And make you smile. And probably our part of the excitement of the Mickey cam is seeing you enjoy, you know, the success as well as commiserate with the failure.
100%. But, you know, I just live, you know, I live it with every player. I watch every ball they face. I watch every ball they bowl. And it might not be from the balcony. It might be, you know, at the back of the change room, peeking through one eye, watching it on the television. But I don't miss a ball for the day. And if I do, I'll take that home and I'll rewatch it, the part that I've missed. Because I think as a coach, for me, that's really important. I need to know what's happened so I can give that player good, honest feedback in the evening. But I live the emotion. You know, what has he done? You know, with a few choice words thrown in, or, you know, yeah, well played, you know, and we get up there because that's just what the game does to me. I just love it.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant to see. And actually, I know what you mean about missing a ball, because particularly when I was working on live for Channel 4 as the analyst, I didn't like to miss a ball.
No.
Because I felt, how can I really tell the proper story
that's
about what's
exactly
happened
right
if I've missed a ball? I would, luckily, I had an advantage. I had a man sat next to me with a box, and he could wind back any ball that I'd missed, and I could watch it three times. Yeah. That's probably what you need, really. And then you could sort of have a little doze for 5 minutes and then watch it all in one go. Just going back to the sort of culture thing a bit, Trevor Bayliss, I'm a big fan of Trevor Bayliss, and I interviewed him recently for a documentary I made about England's World Cup triumph. And he talks about if it goes badly. Well, firstly, he says, I want the players to have fun, you know, enjoy playing. And if it doesn't go well, he goes into the dressing room at the end of the day, and rather than, you know, the hairdryer treatment or blowing off or whatever, he basically says, guys, it didn't quite work today, but we'll all be breathing in the morning and the sun will be shining. Mm. Which I quite like as a sort of ethos, and Stokes has bought into that actually as well. Mm. You know, okay, if Baswell doesn't work today, the sun will be shining and we'll still be breathing in the morning. I mean, how do you deal with failure or whatever, or, you know, disappointment?
Look, to a point, the players can't fear failure. I keep saying to our players, you're going to make mistakes. You will make mistakes. But just make sure your decisions, there's more right ones than there are wrong ones. I'll make mistakes coaching. I'll misjudge situations. We'll all make mistakes, but as long as our intention is good, and we're there for a collective result, it's not bad. I hear all that, but I also think that players need clarity. So players need feedback. I don't think you can just walk in a dressing room at the end of a bad day and go, oh, don't worry, boys, the sun will come up in the morning. I think the players need more substance than that. And whether that's one-on-one conversations or whether that's a discussion in the team room as to what went wrong, and if we get into that situation again, how can we rectify it? And then once that's over, it's all done, and you rock up the next day. So I do see that side of the philosophy, and that's kind of the modern way at the moment. I still think, for me and my coaching philosophy is still to sit down and teach the players, because that's what I'm employed to do. So you do need to have a certain degree of review, I think, at whether it's the end of the day, whether it's the end of the game, whether it's just before the next game, whatever. But I don't think you can just brush things over.
Well, before the break, we heard Mickey Arthur talking about his coaching ethos, amongst other things, and you can just hear his cricketing passion exuding from every pore. So then we moved on to more general subjects, and the next thing I asked him was, how did he think Baswell would influence county cricket this summer?
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And I have to be honest, I've watched every test match this year because it's been phenomenal. I think the cricket that's been played has been exceptional. Brendan McCullum's done a wonderful, wonderful job. Ben Stokes seems to lead that team so, so well. The one rider that I would say is they have some phenomenal players. There are some very... English cricket, and that's why I kind of said the county game, English cricket is in a very, very good position at the moment. There are some wonderful, wonderful players out there playing county cricket. So you can afford with those players to play that way. The test's going to come if some county, and we actually had a team discussion about it yesterday. We have a theme discussion every night, and we spoke about our way. How are we going to win games with Derbyshire? Are we going to leave more grass on the wicket? Are we going to try and up the tempo? And one of our players said, you know what? I think we can just play disciplined cricket. Because they think that, and discipline cricket, you know, it's patience, pressure, partnerships, all those buzzwords that mean something to get a collective outcome. But he thought that every other team that we were going to play was going to come and try and play this Baswell way, which potentially could give us they might be a little bit reckless, and it could give us a shoe in if we hung in long enough and did the good things better than them over a period of time. They might just give us a gap because they could come in and try and play Baswell. Baswell's exceptional, but you need very talented cricketers, and England have those players at the moment.
And that sounds as if you're saying that there is a lot of quality in county cricket, because people perhaps who don't necessarily follow the game that closely are quite dismissive of county cricket, but you, having come from a lot of international coaching, sound quite quite sort of bullish about the quality of playing county cricket.
I'm very bullish about county cricket. Honestly, I've seen domestic first class structures around the world. South Africa, Australia,
Pakistan,
Sri Lanka, yeah. Bangladesh to a point, West Indies to a point. I've just done a review on there and helped them with a review on their structure. I've seen it.
You're everywhere.
I've seen it. I think the English county game is in the top two in terms of first class cricket in the world. And remember, I'm watching from a Division Two eye because we play in Division Two, and there was some phenomenal cricket played in Division Two last year. Some very, very good players out there. County cricket is in a very, very good space. English cricket is producing very, very good cricketers. I was in Sri Lanka in the Lanka Premier League in December.
You are everywhere.
It was very interesting that over that period of time, there were 70 English professionals playing in the franchise leagues around the world.
Yeah.
70. That included Lanka Premier League, Big Bash,
Bangladesh
Premier League, South Africa.
Yeah.
All those were on it almost around the same time.
Yeah.
70 English professionals from county cricket were involved in that. That's a phenomenal number, and that gives a massive thumbs up to the county game and the system that produces those players.
You haven't mentioned the IPL. You haven't. that's missing off your CV.
Yeah, it is. It is missing off my CV.
Maybe one day.
Who knows? One day.
But I mean, just on the coaching thing as well. At the moment, allegedly, you're Derbyshire and Pakistan. So, how's that working?
Well, it's still not 100% confirmed yet. I've got to be honest, but because of my connection with Pakistan and a lot of these young players that are now the leaders, the Baba Azams, the Shadab Khans, Shahin Shah Afridis, Shah Masoods.
You've got a Derbyshire, you've got a Pakistan player coming to Derbyshire.
Haider Ali coming. Because Imad Wazim, Muhammad, you name a whole, because that was the core of my side that won the champion. I've got a really good bond with those players. They certainly have gone through a period.
So they want you, basically.
They want me back. The only way I could do it, and what I've said to the chairman is around the fact that, and Derbyshire have been kept in the loop the whole way, is around the fact I'm not, Derbyshire's my project. I'm not giving that up. But I'll come in and potentially do a
like
World
a consultancy
Cup.
Consultancy.
Yes, I'll be consultant team director. I've set up a support staff for them that's going to come in. The report staff will report into me. I'll do some of the selections.
This is Mickey Arthur Enterprises.
And the minute that I finish with Derbyshire, I'll go to the World Cup, etc., etc. That's still, I must say, categorically, not 100% confirmed yet. That's still in the pipeline. But that's potentially how it could work.
Interesting.
But not to the detriment of Derbyshire, because Derbyshire is my project.
So what are your kind of hopes for this year then?
This year is going to be a very interesting year for us, because our growth last year was exponential. Every player but one last year achieved more than what their career averages said. So that showed for me that there's a bit of a ceiling. It's going to be an interesting year because I don't know how high their ceilings are, because they improved so much exponentially. I don't know how far and how good. You know, I'm hoping that I haven't got 100% out of this group of players. But I'm really looking forward to seeing how they embrace the challenge. We certainly want to win stuff. We want to drive a successful culture. So that's going to be very interesting for me. I inherited a squad with a lot of players. So the players that did really well last year, we've re-signed. Players that I see can be on the journey with us. There's a couple of players in the last years of their contracts, and they'll need to play for their contracts again. And if they don't...
I always had my best season in my last year of my contract. It's incredible.
Funny enough, I think that's right.
But it wasn't a conscious thing.
Wasn't it?
No. Not at all. I honestly don't. I had, like, I think I had 4 3-year contracts, or 3 3-year contracts. Always the third year of the contract, I played really well.
Really?
Yeah. So, and then I got another 3-year
contract. You got another 3-year
contract. But it wasn't at all conscious.
It just happened.
Yeah. I don't know why. But, I mean, I guess you have to look out for that. But then if, you know, that's quite good motivation, really.
Well, it is. And what I don't want is, Derbyshire's not the county now where players come and they get their last pension check and their last legs of their... we're going to sign players that are going to come in and strengthen us. I make no bones about it, and I say it to our players every day. We want to be the county of choice. And we're going to be the county of choice because of our success, because of our structure, because of our coaching team, because of I want players to think they can come to us to play for England. So we started that. We got Zach Chappell in. We've got Matt Lamb. We've got Zach Chappell from Notts. We've got Matt Lamb from Warwickshire. We've strengthened our squad. And those are the ilk of players that we're going to go out and try and find. So we'll have a lot of money, a bit of money to spend at the end of next season. And it's not going to be spent on has-been cricketers. It's going to be spent on guys that are going to advance us as a county. We want promotion. We set our goals up last night. We want to be promoted at the end of the season. If we don't, we failed, and we will then go back to the drawing board and try and create a squad that is going to get us promotion.
And that's the focus, rather than, I'm not saying rather than, but ahead of the white ball stuff.
I think so because it's a
whole season, I suppose.
I think so. You know, for us, the Vitality Blast is great, and the Vitality Blast for it's a very good competition.
And I suppose also it's hard to control T20, isn't it? I mean, you can, you know, it's such a volatile format of the game. However much preparation you make, there's no guarantees there. Whereas, I suppose, you know, it's a longer, the county championship is, in the end, the best teams.
Well, that's it.
You get the most points.
You've
right?
got to play consistently well over 14 games. Over 14 games. So you've got to be really good. Vitality Blast, we went on a run last year, as I say, we won 9 in a row. And that was Lancashire, Yorkshire, Nottinghamshire, Durham. You know, those groups are quite strong. Birmingham Bears, yeah, we went and beat them all. And that was just by playing collectively. But it was only one player. One player can change a 2020 game, as you know. Where I think in four-day cricket, you need a collective. You need the team to over a season, you need contributions from everybody. So that's where our focus lies. Although, you know, we're not chucking the Vitality Blast out at all. That's still big for us. And then the Royal London Cup is when the players are away on the 100. Mm. I expect us to do well in that because we don't lose as many players as some of the other counties to the 100. So I expect us then to do exceptionally well.
Derbyshire, are you kind of getting into the Derbyshire culture? You know, the local food and...
I still don't know whether it's a roll or a bap or a cob.
I think that's Leicestershire, isn't it? Leicestershire cob, definitely.
I think it's a Derbyshire bap. I'm not sure, but I do know when I go and ask for my breakfast, it's say op doc. So I have mastered that one. But I'm enjoying it. I live just outside Derby. I've got a nice little place just in the sort of country. The Peak District is wonderful. It's a really lovely, a really nice county. Look, I'm an Arsenal football supporter, and I have been since I was a very, very young boy. But
so you're happy at the moment?
I'm very happy at the moment. But I go to every Derby County game when I'm there. I've developed a relationship with their manager, Paul Warne, at the moment. So yeah, I'm loving it. I don't miss Derby County when I can. So that's they're getting up there. I mean, they'll never quite be my Arsenal, but I really enjoy that. So I am embracing the county, and I find it really good.
Apart from your attendance at Derby County, do you eat, breathe, and sleep cricket?
I do. I do. I watch every game. I know every result. I'll go on and the first thing I do in the morning is to check every cricket site. I want to know what's happening. It's my job. I firmly see that as my job.
You haven't listened to this podcast.
I haven't listened to this podcast.
I'm going to send you one every week.
Yes, please.
And make you listen to
please.
It.
Please. I haven't listened to this podcast before. But I do. I eat, breathe, sleep cricket. Sport. I just adore it.
Is it a Leicestershire cob or a Derbyshire cob? It's a bread roll, basically, isn't it? And it's kind of debatable who owns that term, the cob. All I know is that, well, A, they're very nice, and B, in Durham, they're called stotty kicks. Have you heard of a stotty kick? It's like a big flat piece of bread, which you know, can put cheese in or peas pudding or ham or whatever. It's a meal in itself in Durham. I love the way that, you know, your different types of bread have different names according to the region of England that you're from.
Is that what you served up when you...
A load of pies is what I served up. But the odd one got a wicket.
Oh, pies. All right. Yeah. Well, if you chuck enough
money... Very funny. Yeah, I would have loved having Mickey Arthur as coach. I mean, he's just so enthusiastic. And, you know, one of the things he said to me, actually, was... You know, I was watching him coaching in the Nets. And he watches like a hawk. I mean, my experience of coaches was... Unless... Mike Gatting or one of the star players was doing something, they weren't interested really. And they very rarely said anything at all of value, except when you had a bad day when they went, well, that was shit, wasn't it, kind of thing. And I would have loved someone to have gone into so much detail. You know, Mickey said that he watches every ball, obviously in play, but also in the nets, like a hawk. And then he makes sure that every day of practice and matches, he speaks to every player for at least, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, just kind of throwing ideas, making a couple of comments or observations. So he prides himself on that detail, which is impressive.
Yeah, I also think as well, I thought it was interesting, because he slightly pushed back, didn't he, on the what seems to be sort of the modern philosophy of coaching, which is to sort of let the player work it out for himself. I mean, he says, what did he say? I'm a teacher, you know, and, you know, if we've had a bad day, I want to sit down with the team, the players, whatever, and go through what went wrong and what we could do about it. Whereas I sense that, I mean, I'm sure there's far more nuance to this than perhaps other coaches let on. But I mean, you used an example of Trevor Bayliss, wasn't you? You know, you asked the question. Trevor would say, well, we've had a bad day. The sun's still going to shine in the morning. And, you know, hopefully we're still going to be alive and back here for another day. And, you know, trying to sort of put that positive spin. Whereas Mickey was saying, yeah, I want to sit down with the players and try to work out what went wrong. And it seems like there's a very different approach there. And, you know, you think back to things like Homework Gate, don't you? In when they were in India and how that all went wrong. Although, you know, there was the admission there that the Australian job came too soon, and also the different cultures between the various countries. You know, South Africa was very different from coaching Australia, and he feels that he's a far more mature coach now. One of the other interesting things I thought from that interview was how how Basball, for want of a better term, is going to seep into the English game. And actually they sat down and thought about how teams are going to try to play against us, and the suggestion from one of the unnamed player there that actually one of the ways to counter it is to play disciplined cricket. Was it patience, pressure, partnerships? Play disciplined cricket, almost let the team come on to you and make the mistakes, sit in the game, let them make mistakes. And I wonder whether, to some extent, New Zealand allowed England to do that in that test match in Wellington. I'd be fascinated to see how Australia are going to approach England when they play them in the Ashes. What sort of approach they are going to take against England's ultra-aggressive style? Just, are they going to sit in, let them make mistakes? So it's great, actually, that players, clubs are sitting down and thinking about how they're going to approach this phenomenon. Because of course, the point scoring system has changed in the county championship this season. So there's a premium on scoring a bit quicker. So you've got 110 overs to get your bonus points. And the first point you get now is 250. So if you don't score 250, you don't get a batting point. But you also got to get those runs relatively quickly to keep accruing them from 250 up to 450 if you want 5 points inside the 110 overs. So there is an encouragement to go for it a bit, and also the fact that it's down, it's 8-5 for a draw. So there's fewer points now for a draw. So there's, you know, the feeling that is it going to be a more attacking cricket in the championship? How do you counter that? What do you do?
It's partly, and Mickey kind that. Of referred to this really, it's slightly conditioned by the talent that you got. And he obviously was very, very complimentary about the range of match winners that England have and those sort of lying around in county cricket as well who haven't necessarily had an opportunity yet. I think he's also realistic about Derbyshire. And actually, if you look at their stats from last year, yeah, they came fifth, but they weren't that far away from winning promotion. It was just towards the end of the season where they dropped off a bit. No. And if you look at their performances, there are sort of about five batsmen who all scored nearly 1,000 runs. Wayne Madsen got 1,200. Sean Massoud, who's now captain of Yorkshire, 1,000, average 82. I'll tell you one that what we should look out for, who's going to be impressive, I think, is Anuj Dal, who came from Nottinghamshire originally. Yeah, 957 runs at 73.
Had a good season, didn't he?
Batting sort of down the order. And he can bowl as well. He took 34 wickets. Really bright character. He's training to be a financial advisor. That's pretty shrewd. With the St. James's Place company. And I was talking to him for quite a long time. He's a real student of the game and, you know, really, really ambitious and able to adapt to different circumstances and so on. But what the point I'm making is they had five players there that scored, I don't know, 800 plus runs at a decent average and a number of bowlers that took, you know, 40 odd wickets. In a way, no, apart from Sean Massoud, no absolute standout. Well, Wayne Madsen always produces in county cricket, but
he's 39 now, Yoz.
He is, and he's injured at the moment, apparently. But I don't know how seriously. But I suppose, you know, particularly looking at their bowling attack, there's no one again who absolutely stands out. I'm quite impressed with Sam Connors, who looks useful. He's a bit of a sort of Jimmy Anderson, very, very lithe, fast bowler, about that sort of pace, about Anderson's sort of pace. He's been on the Lions in Sri Lanka. He took 50 wickets last year, at slightly high average, 35, but he looks talented. And Mickey mentioned Ben Aitchison as well, who's a big, strong, fast bowler. So, you know, they've got kind of some interesting players, but nobody, they haven't got many real out-and-out match winners. So maybe that patience, partnerships and pressure approach is suited to their kind of makeup.
Yeah. Sam Connors, you mentioned there, had a decent season with the ball and got plenty of wickets. He was one of those that played against England before that Pakistan series in the UAE. Remember they had that match where everyone just thrashed it? And he in keeping with most of the bowlers that played in that game, he went 10 overs, 1 for 77 against that sort of all out assault that England produced, then, you know, went on to produce on the first day of the Test match in Rawalpindi. But he's obviously someone that, well, I mean, he's obviously caught the eye of the selectors, hasn't he? So he's someone to look out for in the coming season, along with Anuj Dal as well, see how those players progress. So Mickey's saying promotion, the goal for Derbyshire. I suppose all coaches at this stage of the season are saying the same thing. It's no point going into the season and saying, well, actually, we're looking not to finish bottom or whatever. But perhaps it is a bit more, it might be a bit more realistic for Derbyshire this season than last season. They had Nottinghamshire, who were, you know, clearly the best side in the second division last season, and Middlesex, your old county, you know, got over the line as well to take that final place. So, and Derbyshire get underway on the 6th of April with a home match against Worcestershire. How did you feel about bowling at Derby in April, Yoz? Did you ever do that or not?
Yes. Derby in those days was very different. For a start, the pitch was aligned completely differently to how it is now. They changed it, I don't know how long ago, 20 years ago. And it was like a billiard table to bowl on. So it was five seamers at Derby, invariably. And that Derbyshire attack, I mean, we are going back a bit here, but Devon Malcolm, Ul Mortensen, many of our slightly older listeners will remember him, the Great Dane, Ul Mortensen, known as Stan, because of the old footballer. And he was a fantastic bowler. He had big, huge stride to the wicket and a whirl of arms and swung it late and stared at you down the wicket if you played a miss and said, "God hellfire!" and walked back to his mark, and bristling with intent and aggression. They had Alan Warner, who really liked exploring the middle of the pitch and was quite a feisty, fast bowler. Obviously, Dominic Cork came through latterly. So, you know, they had a lot of very good seamers, and it was just very green, and no spinner ever got a bowl. And it was quite good fun, actually. It was a funny place to play at the time because it was like an old race course. And, you know, it didn't feel like a cricket ground. It was a race course adapted into a cricket ground. It was very windy and cold, and the pavilion was absolutely awful. So, you know, it was a strange experience. But part of life's rich tapestry, I suppose.
Yeah, so Derbyshire looking to achieve something this season. They're looking to get promotion. Here's a question on yours. They've won the championship once. You mentioned it. They've had a little bit of one-day success along the way as well. When did they win the championship? Do you know the year?
I think it was 1936. What's the answer?
It was 1936.
And I didn't look that up, actually.
Well done. Yeah.
I always use it to wind up Dusty Miller, Jeff Miller, you know, who obviously is one of the most hilarious people on the circuit. Our brilliant after dinner speaker, selector for God knows how long, 12 years, England selector. Mm. He wasn't even born when they won the championship.
At least they've done it once, though.
Oh, no. And Gloucester have never done it.
Well, that's the interesting thing is, I mean, the modern championship is considered to have started in 1890, but of course, you know, they are perceived to be.
Oh, you're not going to start claiming that Gloucestershire did win the championship in the 1870s when W.G. Grace was a dominant figure and there's about six teams in it. I'm sorry, that doesn't wash.
Why not?
Well, because it wasn't a proper competition.
Why not?
You know, it's one out of six or one of our eight teams. It was only in 1892 that there was a proper quorum of teams competing, and that's when, you know, the official county championship began.
Mm. Well, that's when the people say it did, yeah.
But you know, bleat on, but you're not going to get any county championships that way. You have to actually play well and win through a season and actually be in the first division as well.
Well, Derbyshire will be playing Gloucestershire this season. Gloucestershire had a very poor season in the championship last time round, and like all the second division coaches, their coach will be saying our aim is to win promotion this time round. 3 weeks to go then, Yoz. Actually, the sun is just about shining today. You get just a sense of spring in the air after some freezing cold days. But do you think players are really looking forward to the 6th of April? Or
absolutely.
Depends what the weather's like.
Well, they do. Of course they will. And it does depend a bit on the weather. But especially if you've been in England most of the winter, I mean, you're just desperate to get out there and play. And I think also the added impetus that England have given county players as well. You always feel that much better when England have come back from a successful winter. You know, they've won the Ashes or they've beaten the West Indies or whatever. You know, you feel better as a professional cricketer because your team, your nation has performed and has actually, you know, also caused a lot of headlines. And yeah, I you know, they're all desperate to get out there and kind of carry on the good work that McCullum and Stokes have started.
Well, Mickey Arthur there saying that interview, I hadn't actually put a number on it and just done the research on how many players have been playing abroad in franchise competitions, etc. this winter, but 70. So you're saying they haven't been playing, but a lot of them have been playing, haven't they? And still are playing and still will be playing. Some of them playing in the IPL. 70 English professionals playing in competitions around the world this winter.
Yeah, and that obviously is great for them, but in a way, still, unless you're an England contracted player, still your county is your home. And that's the place you sort of belong. And that's where all your mates are. And, you know, it's familiar territory. So you do really look forward to, even though players now play for all sorts of other teams around the world, you do really look forward to getting back to your county because it feels like home.
Hmm. OK, well, that's Derbyshire and other things as well. Watch this space on Mickey Arthur teaming up with Pakistan again. Next week, we're going to have a look at Hampshire, Yoz.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, obviously they had a brilliant season last year and were narrowly beaten to the title by Surrey. But very talented team, enterprising cricketers. very, very good opening attack. Have you looked at their bowling attack? Carl Abbott, Keith Barker, Mohammed Abbas and others. They are a batsman's nightmare at the beginning of the season. So, yeah, we're going to talk to some people from Hampshire next week. And I'd just like to say good luck to Mickey Arthur, because he just is one of cricket's great people and he deserves some success. And Derbyshire should be pleased to have him, actually. And, you know, I good luck to them too.
Final word to me, Yoz. With the Grace brothers and Billy Midwinter in their team, Gloucestershire won 3 champion county titles in the 1870s. Since then, Gloucestershire's fortunes have been mixed and they've never won the official county championship. That's from the Gloucestershire County Cricket Club Wikipedia page.
Well, I'm just going to get the violins out to end this podcast. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.